Okay, so the Perigdalid in Esther is really the turning point of the book. So it's building towards its climax, and then everything turns in a very, very straightforward literary way, or as straightforward and backwards and upside down as everything in Esther is. But we leave off in Perek Gimel. The end of Perek Gimel is the drama that Haratzim Yatzu Tchufim Dvar HaMelech Vadat Nitan B'Shushan HaBirav HaMelech Baman Yeshu L'Shtot Be'er Shoshon Navocha. The people, the messengers have gone out to execute the decree, or not execute, to
deliver
and communicate the decree of Achashverosh, of Haman really, but with the seal of Achashverosh to everyone, and Shushan is Navocha, right? The Jews are crying or mourning. Mordechai, so Perek Dalet opens. Mordechai yada et kol asher nasa, vayikra Mordechai begadav, vayibash sak vayifer, vayitzei betoch ha'ir, vayizak zaka gdola umarav. And Mordechai knows what happened, and he tears his clothes. Now, it's not clear how quickly he knows in pshat. The Ibn Ezra assumes it's not immediate, because he translates this pasuk as kasher yada, when he found out. So then he did this, which sounds like it took some time before he found out. Rashi says, Bala chalom omar lo, shiskimu el yonim lekach. He was told in a dream, meaning sounds like immediate, because God agreed, because the Jews deserved it, and following the Midrash that because they bowed in the time of Nebuchadnezzar and they ate from the Suda of Achashverosh.
According to Rashi, did he learn that the reason behind it in the dream, or the dream was just what happened?
No, he learned in the dream that God agreed with it. Right, that had happened and that God was okay with it. Where God decreed it. Did he know the reasons? I don't know if he... unclear to me. Now, Chazal, when do they think Mordechai finds out? Do you remember, Uri, from last week?
How long after?
Yeah.
I don't remember.
Immediate. They think all this happens, Mamish, in the same day. Because they think that the fasting happens... Right, this happens on the 13th of Nisan, and they think the fasting is the 13th, 14th, and the 15th going into the Pesach, which means they think this happened immediately. Right? In pshat, it could be that it happens a little bit later, maybe a week or two, maybe a few weeks, maybe ER, who knows? Sivan, I don't know. Meaning it clearly doesn't happen in Adar, which is important if you ever think about Tainus Esther. Tainus Esther is not this fast. Just not. Right? Meaning this fast, according to Chazal, happens on the 13th, 14th, and 15th of Nisan, not the 13th of Adar. And again, we know that in the time of the earliest records that we have, Yud Gimel Adar is Yom Nikanor, is a celebration where it's usher to fast. Very good. So this is very much not Tainus Esther. So he puts on sackcloth and he goes up to the gate of the king, and he doesn't go in to the Sha'ar, because you can never enter into the gate of the king, Bilavush Sak. Now, does this remind you of anything? Right here, there's a... I was looking. Last year, we did this as a Parsha Shir, Parsha Truma. So I'll throw it out to you now. Does this scene yet remind you of anything?
Like specifically in Tanakh, or like a general...
Yeah. There should be something in Tanakh that should start to ring bells. Is there anywhere else you can't go, Bilavush Sak? Any other king whose house you can't go into, Bilavush Sak?
I'm going to do a wild guess about here that you can't go into the Mishkan of the Mikdash.
Of course not. Exactly. Right. You can't go in. Right. The Kohen Gadol, Bigadav, right? Like, right. You can't. He can't tear his clothing because he has to stay inside the Beit HaMikdash. Into the house of that Melech, you have to. And there are these resonances.
That meaning Hashem?
Like, yeah, that one.
Yeah, okay,
yeah, that
I
one.
Know.
Very good. HaMelech.
I was still waiting for the human king. Okay.
No. HaMelech, the king. And there are other indications. So, for example, we're about to find out that the punishment for anybody who goes into the inner chamber of the king without permission is death, which should make it, which should sound familiar.
Right, at least earlier in the earlier in the story.
Yeah, and God.
And
no one can go into the Kodesh Kadashim without permission unless you're the Kohen Gadol.
Do you think they would really draw parallels from Ahasuerus and Hashem?
Oh, I think they absolutely do.
Isn't that not great based on how we're...
Well, if you want to think about it midrashically, that's exactly the point, that Ahasuerus' sin is that he tries to be a god. Right? If you think about it, right, the midrash says, what is the celebration of his suuda? Why is he celebrating the suuda that opened the book, remember? Because he thinks that the prophecy is over, and therefore God has lost and will never be going
to
Jews. Exactly, and therefore he celebrates with the kelim of the Beit HaMikdash. Chazal are telling you in no uncertain terms that Ahasuerus thinks he beat God. But that is, and even if that's not actually what he's thinking, the fact that he clearly views himself as this divine, and the point I made to the guys last year for my clapper, I want to see what exactly I said in it, was a point that I've made several points from my clapper, is that how do we refer to God? At some point we come to refer to God as Melech Malchei Hamlachim. That's a very strange thing. Translate that.
The king of kings of kings.
The king of king of kings.
Yeah.
Right? That's a very... Why is he the Melech Malchei Hamlachim?
Isn't Malchei like the ruler?
Yeah, but what's the Melech Malchei Hamlachim?
Implying
the king?
Or
the king of kings?
The regular king of kings, and he is the king of...
Very good. Who's the, so why would God be the king of kings, and not just the king of kings?
Because there's clearly some kind of, you know, two levels to this...
Yeah, give me an English word for Malchei Hamlachim. Thank you. Emperor.
So king of emperors.
Yes, it becomes an important phrase in the age of emperors, in the age of Persia. When you have a king over 127 kingdoms, he's really the emperor of other kings, and God is the king over the emperors. He's not the king over the kings, he's the king over the king of kings.
Uh-huh.
He's the king over the emperor. And that a lot of the subtext in... You know, if you've never done this, it's worth doing, and maybe we'll do this at some point. If you've never actually read Esther in the sectarian versions, yes, like we have in Qumran, we found other Esthers. In other Esthers, every time you think there should be God in Esther, there is.
Oh,
right. Like when they fast, Esther just says they fast. In that one, it says they fast and daven to God. Right. Like every time you think there's God, it's there. But it only makes it clearer that Esther is a conscious choice to eviscerate God, because the Persian context is one that is actively godless.
Right.
Meaning it's active. And therefore, to see these hints at Ahasuerus being, right, treating himself divinely or fighting against God, whether or not he's thinking that, that's clearly the hubris of Ahasuerus is perceived that way in Chazal's thought, that he is an anti-God figure. So you get this, that they go up to the gate, he can't come in. And wherever the king, in every country, wherever the king's law reaches, they are mourning. The Jews are mourning. They're fasting. Yeah.
Why does it say it translates the Rabbim as most of them?
Well, which one?
The end of Prophet. The Ifu Yitzhar.
Yeah, it's a many. I don't know if most is a good translation. Many. Right? Many. A lot. You know, is it everybody? I don't know. A lot. Right? Some people don't know. Some people assume they'll escape. I don't know. A lot. But Esther doesn't know. So Vatavona now wrote Esther Viserisel Vayagidu La Vatidchalchala Malka Meod Vatishlach Begadim Malbishel Mordechai La Sir Sakomei Lav Lo Kibel. She's so... has no idea what's going on. What does she do? Wait, what's her solution?
She sent some clothes.
Yeah, she's like, oh, you can vault. He doesn't have clothing. Right? let me make him feel better. Right? Let's... which is so... so odd. It's just so odd. And now, the interesting thing is...
What's her thought process?
Ah, so if you just tell me in pshat, what's your thought process? That she literally has no idea what's going on.
I know, but I still find it hard to believe that she looks at Mordechai or one of his fastballs. And she's just like, oh.
She doesn't. She doesn't look at him. Remember, it's very meduyak. She is told by people. She doesn't see him. There's no direct contact.
But even so, Mordechai apparently can just, like, walk into, like, the king's...
No, he can't. He's outside.
No, in general.
Okay.
Anyone who walks into the gate, you just can't be wearing the sackcloth. But, like, it's not like a...
Yeah, but you can't necessarily get into the palace.
Yeah, right.
Clearly he has enough prominence.
No. Why is he prominent?
I mean, he is prominent. We know he's prominent. He's clearly around there. He's someone who hangs out near the gates.
We know he's near there. We know he hangs out near the gates because of the whole Big Sun Search.
He's, right, he's clearly is, but there's no dialogue. But this is the amazing thing, is that there is no face-to-face. She's totally sheltered. Right, that's what the Pesukim are emphasizing. And then, magically, she has a solution to figure out what's going on. And what's that solution called? Hatach. Right? First, she finds out from her maidservants, but now he doesn't accept, so that is clearly Mordechai's like, there's something going on. This is not just like, oh, he had a bad day. So, right, she ups her game and she's saying something else is going on. I need my private trusted servant Hatach to go to Mordechai. Ladat, right, this is a great pasuk, right? To know what's going on, right? It's not just to help him. There's something more than he's just said. Now, who did Chazal say Hatach is?
Daniel.
In an absolutely amazing act of parshanut, they say that he is Daniel. And they say, why is he called Hatach? Shechatchuhu migdulato. He was cut down from his greatness.
Wait, why did it be Daniel?
So this is an amazing move of parshanut. Why would they say it's Daniel? Very good.
What is parshanut?
Interpretation. But this is a beautiful midrash, because there are three books, three stories in Tanakh that are essentially ruminations on, ponderings on, the way a Jew functions in Galut. Yosef, Esther, and Daniel. Except they're fundamentally different, because what is Daniel's way of dealing with Galut? No. To be completely in your face about him being Jewish. Completely in your face, always.
The whole thing with him, like, opening the window.
With everything! Everything. We will not eat we will not eat your food. Please inform everyone, we'll not eat your food. I will open my window and daven toward Yerushalayim in explicit decree and be thrown into the lion's den. Hanani Mishael Azar, we will be thrown into the fire. He yells at the king always over. He's always known as Daniel Dimin Yehud, right? The Jew. And even though he has a name, Belteshazzar, often they call him Daniel anyways. Right, he is in your face. What about Esther and Mordechai in Pshat? Yes, their way of dealing with it is, shh, don't say anything. Esther is told by Mordechai, say nothing to no one ever. I don't want anyone to know until the moment is ripe. And even then, it's not, you know, he's like, good, they are. And what do Chazal do? Beautifully and midrashically, they read Daniel into Esther. Because what do they say about Esther? Pshat. What food did Esther eat? Pshat.
Food did she eat?
Yeah.
Then nothing.
What?
So presumably not kosher, because no one knew she was Jewish. So they presumably she ate whatever there was. What do Chazal say? She only ate fruits and vegetables and nuts. Where did they get that from? Because that's what Daniel, Chadani, Mishal, Vazar eat. When they say we won't eat not kosher, right? They constantly, why? Because for Chazal, there are two different models of dealing with Galut. In different times, they're both relevant. But Chazal prefer, at least in their time, which model? Daniel. And therefore, they read Daniel back into Esther. And they say, oh yeah, Hatach, that's Daniel, right? Now, why do they think it's Daniel who went from being a very important political person in Daniel, where at his height, he rules a third of the kingdom, according to Pshat, to being... So they go through different things, right? The one version, the Aradvash, quotes from the Zohar, that maybe it's because at some point Daniel was so important that people worshipped him, and therefore, even though it was no fault of his own, he had to be taken down a notch because... Yeah. But the Zohar therefore says, in response to that, that because of that, he had to be taken down a notch because, through no fault of his own, he's now a chetzah shel avod zarah. So you can't leave him in that power. You need to take him down to remove that stigma. That could be. That's definitely somewhere. I'm trying to remember the Gemara and the Midrash, but I think that is correct. The Meshech Chachma is a different one, which is maybe what makes Daniel special, is the fact that he's Moser Nefesh for God, and by the time you get to Esther, that's par for the course. Everyone is, their life is all on the line for being Jewish, so you're not so special anymore. Okay, interesting shot by the Meshech Chachma. It's in his first, it's one of his first comments, if not his first comment on Esther. But whoever it is, right, it's also a beautiful move, because Chazal also, why do they have a motivation to put a Jew here? Right, what... Exactly, meaning clearly she needs someone she trusts, so they got to put somebody in. And why don't they just say it's some random Jew?
They would have the same self-interest.
Yeah, why Dafka Daniel, not some random Jew?
Because he balances out their...
So that could be it. There's also an even more general principle, which is what Chaim Angel very nicely calls the rule of conservation of biblical personalities. Right, which is basically, Chazal are like, we don't like inventing people we've never heard of. So if there's someone we don't know, it has to be someone we've already heard of.
It's too problematic to say that you can invent people at all.
Correct, but meaning here it's someone named Hatach. You could just say, I'm not inventing anyone, his name is Hatach. But Chazal have this thing of the conservation of biblical personalities. There aren't so many. A equals B equals C equals D equals E.
So it's probably just more likely that they're saying of someone of...
Or they don't mean it literally, and they mean it's... Right, there is this... in your faceness that needs to be part of this story in order for it to get going. Because, right, a very beautiful midrashic way of reading this would be, until now Esther is hiding her personality. This is the conversation that's going to make her reveal herself. She needs an injection of a little Daniel, or it ain't going to work. Right, that would be, I think, a very nice midrashic way of pshat. Meaning, you know, as Rabbi Bednarsh said once, and I've used this as my rule in reading Agadata, is sometimes... the drash on the drash is omek pshutol shel mikra. Right?
Enemy of your enemy is your friend.
Or something like that. It means the depth of the pshat. Right? Meaning, sometimes taking the midrash and understanding it midrashically is the way that you get back to what the pasuk really means. Meaning, is this really Daniel? I don't know. Is it pshat that Esther has to shift from the mode of Esther, which is hiding who she is, to Daniel, which is being in your face Jewish by the end, in order to survive? Yes, that is Me'ahu's pshat in this book. So Vayitzei Hatach al Mordechai al Rechov Vayir Shilifnei Sharam Melech. So Hatach goes to Mordechai. Vayaged lo Mordechai et kol asher karahu. Vid parshat hakesef asher amar haman lishkol genzei hamelech v'yudim la'amidam. So he tells him the Gansa Maisa. He says everything. Now, by the way, Chazal have a also amazing shot here that the reason this is happening is because of Yaakov stealing the brachot from Esav. And that the reason the Jews now have to cry this bitter cry is because they caused Esav to cry the bitter cry. And of course, Chazal see it that way because they see Haman as the heir of Amalek, and Amalek is the heir of Esav. And therefore, they see this as... But that's a whole story in and of itself, where Chazal really do blame Yaakov in certain sense for stealing the brachot. They don't see him as exonerated.
Wouldn't
they
say that Amalek Dafka isn't the heir of, like, Edom?
No, he is.
Because
Amalek is.
Because for starters, everyone else is called Edom.
He's not the only one, but he is one of them.
But also, it kind of specifies that Amalek is from a blood.
Okay, fine, but he's still an heir of it.
He is. He is an heir.
Yes, correct. Correct, and therefore, you know, like all the evil, all the bad, right, gets sort of encapsulated in him. Now, of course, you know, there's other images in this moment that invoke that story, right? The emphasis on the switch of clothes in this moment of the cry also invokes that, sort of, you know, alludes to that story. Okay. Now, of course, at this moment, the fact that she doesn't know what's going on, and that she thinks that the way to solve it is with clothing, right, highlights the extent to which she is at least perceived as Persian. Right, she doesn't know what's going on. No one bothers to tell her. And she thinks it can all be solved by going back to looking like a regular Persian, right? Like, she's very in that world, and that's very much hinted here. And in general, even though the pasuk doesn't say it, normally crying in sackcloth is part of tshuva. I mean, she's not part of that either. Right? At this point, she's not, assuming that's what's happening, she's not part of that either. There's no... She's just not. Right, she's not speaking that language right now, and that drama is very much here. And there's a criticism, right? She's shocked by the whole thing. Yoni Grossman also points that this is one of the few places in the book where she is just Esther, no Malka, no nothing, right? Like, she's like stripped bare of it at this moment. There's this. Other way around. Not that she's just Esther, that she's Malka without Esther. Right? At the moment of her shock, she's only the Malka. Right? Meaning she's lost her name. She's just the queen of Persia.
Why? It seems like an act of ignorance.
Well, yeah, but meaning she's so Persian that she doesn't even know what's going on.
Oh, so
she's shocked because she's just the queen.
It's almost more derogatory to call her Malka.
Yeah, I mean, derogatory. The point is she's so embedded in Persian culture that moment that she, like... She just doesn't know what's going on. She's just the Malka. That's why she doesn't know. And of course, there's a physical distance between her and Mordechai, which is symbolic of this cultural distance at this point. So she, and he tells her the whole story. And he tells Hatach, and again, this is also where it has to be someone she trusts. He says, please go and plead from the king. Now, of course, Chazal had this also beautiful midrashic thing they do. That whenever it says Hamelech by itself, it's a hint to Hashem. Right? Which is, go to Ahasuerus, but really, right? Go to Hashem here. And here, if we only get this point out today, so ro'oi. Shevo hatach ve'agel Esther devrei dor Mordechai. V'tomer Esther lahatach v'tzitzaveo Mordechai. Esther tells Hatach to go back to Mordechai. Call avdei Hamelech v'amidon Hamelech yodim asher kol ish v'ishar asher yavo el Hamelech. Tell Mordechai that everybody knows the law. What's the law? Anyone who goes without being called is killed unless the king points to you and says, come. Everybody knows. And she's pretty clear. All the king's servants, you know, you too, you know this law. You know what you're asking me to do. Are you out of your mind? And the crazy thing is that this is happening with Hatach. Right? Whoever this Hatach is, right? You understand why Chazal are like, this conversation.
This has to be someone.
This has to be someone she trusts with her life. Because remember, the pasuk says that Hatach is the servant that Ahasuerus gave her. You're like, this is no servant Ahasuerus gave her. You understand what Chazal are like, really? That?
But does it end up being that Ahasuerus gave her to say, like you know, like Hamela or whatever?
Fine, but now Ahasuerus is helpful because he existed. Sorry, Daniel exists in the Persian courts in earlier books in Tanakh.
Does that put him on a totally different timeline than this? Going by either opinion of when this happened.
What?
Going by either opinion of when this happened. Is this what Daniel asked him, like, you know, totally far off?
No, Daniel's not far off. He's right before. In Pshat, he's right before.
But, like, couldn't have actually lived during this time. Or he could
have. Oh, he could have. There's no particular reason. He could have. No, he could be alive. Old, but alive. He could be.
Okay.
I mean, it depends a little bit on timeline, but it's not impossible.
So
Vayagidu leMordechai et Divrei Esther. And then you get this amazing moment in Pasuk Yud Gimel, which is Vayomer Mordechai Lashiv El Esther. Who disappears from the Pasuk? Hatach. Right? At this point, it's clear that there is an intermediary. It doesn't say Vayomer Mordechai Le Esther. It's Vayomer Mordechai Lashiv El Esther. But Hatach is gone. Now, Hatach is assumed, but the Pasuk sort of goes out of its way to emphasize that this is a much more direct conversation. Even if technically, physically, it's actually happening with an intermediary, that's not how the Pasuk wants you to feel it.
Right.
Right? Vayomer Mordechai Lashiv El Esther. And now, this is one of my favorite words from Rai Foreman. What do you expect Mordechai to say right now? First of all, is what Mordechai is asking Esther reasonable?
To go to the king? No.
Absolutely not. Why? Yeah, but it's very good shot.
I have the book in my...
Good. But first, is this a reasonable thing to say?
No.
No, why is it not reasonable?
Because she'll just get killed.
And she's going to go soon, because it's been 30 days, right? She's implying he's going to go soon. And what else? Remember, what month is it?
Nisan.
Whatever. Right, according to Chazal, Nisan, maybe ER. There's a good 10 months to go.
At least 8 months, even if you're assuming that.
Right? Right? There's
there's a action.
So, right? Can you wait a day or two until he calls me? A week? If he doesn't call me in a month, come back to me. Right? This is completely unreasonable. And then, yes. So, if you've read the book, this is one of my favorite moments. What do you expect him to say? Besides the fact this is completely unreasonable, but what do you expect him to say? If you wanted to convince Esther to go, what would you say?
Say, you need to go now, no one else will go.
Good! Is that what he says?
The opposite.
No, he says the opposite, which is insane. Don't care about your soul to be saved in the king's house from all the Jews. What are you waiting to say? Now, this pasuk is crazy at so many levels. First of all, you have to do it for you, because the Jews will be saved from somebody else, from somewhere else. Really? Really? That's the last thing I wanted to hear. That's what Esther should say. Great, then I won't do it. Right? You're so confident? Also, this is the moment in the book where, shock of shocks, if you look in the sectarian versions in Quran, this pasuk includes what? God! This is where, like, any Jewish book should yell, God will save us. And it says, if you don't do it, it'll happen. It'll happen! Ta-da! Right, God, not there. Right, totally amazing pasuk. Right?
It would be very simple to say if you go down the route of Achashverosh actually did proofread this, and you didn't just, you know, put blindly put a seal of approval, that they were just leaving God's version, God's side.
Yeah.
But now, it's much more interesting thing to say if you don't assume that.
Yeah. Now, Yoni Grossman, by the way, claims that Hatach's complete, from a literary perspective, Hatach's entire role here is to disappear at this pasuk, right? Is to highlight the moment at which this becomes intense, right? Is when he drops and it becomes Mordechai versus Esther. That this is, and the way he puts it is that as long as Hatach is involved, this is very much like Persian royalty. Right, I'm the queen, the Mordechai, we do this by normal protocol, and as soon as he disappears, it is...
It's nuts.
What?
It's nuts.
This is like personal pleading, right? This is not... Right, forget protocol.
Forget due process.
Right, exactly. What he's pointing at is that the moment at which Mordechai says, drop protocol, the psukim drop protocol, Hatach disappears. It's as if Mordechai is talking directly to Esther, even if he might not actually be. But it makes it seem like protocol has dropped, and that intermediary is gone. Right? At the moment in which he says, be ready to break the law and break protocol, the protocol breaks, which is a beautiful literary device. But yes, then he says this crazy thing, which is, which is, of course, insane. What he should have said is, who knows if this is the reason that you came, because you're the only one who can do it, rather than, you came here for yourself, but it'll happen one way or the other. And of course, right, Foreman says, right, this is the key to the entire Megillah, is to realize that the theology of the Megillah is what seems chance is not, right? And we've talked about this with Dot, right? That the Persians, everything which is actually capricious, they call law, right? They pretend it's ordered. He's angry at his wife. He says it's a violation of the law that husbands have to be obeyed by their wives. Haman is angry at Mordechai. There's a nation who violates laws who all has to be killed. This is not a personal vendetta, right? They pretend that the world really functions on pure caprice, and they veil it in order. And Mordechai does the exact opposite, which is there is an order, right? Everything will work out in the end. There is a master plan in the world. Who actually takes advantage of being part of that plan? That's up to you. Meaning, it'll work out. I know that. I know there's a master plan. The details are up to human beings to sacrifice themselves, right? To sacrifice of themselves, to commit themselves, to be zocha, to be part of the master plan.
But it's a sure bet.
Yeah. Exactly, right? It's the exact opposite, right? In Shushan, there is no real master plan. We pretend there's a master plan to just justify our caprice. And therefore, Haman says, right, I do everything by a lot, right, by lottery, right? Complete chaos. There is no real order in this world. And Mordechai said, look, there's an order, I don't understand it. Our theology as Jewish people is, it's there, and we are lucky if we get the opportunity to be a cog in this machine. But the machine will run with one cog or the other. But there is an order to the world. The only randomness is free will. Is do you choose to take advantage of it? Right, which is one of, I think, the most beautiful reads of these psukim. Now, Rav Lichtenstein also had a very famous drasha that he gave on this, where apparently he once got up and over the course of several hours built up to it, but he said basically the message is that Mordechai gets up, and apparently as he said this he roared and said one question which everyone has to ask in their life, which is ichpat lecha or lo ichpat lecha, which is do you care or do you not care? Right, that's the message. This moment is climactic. He focused not on the national level, but in the internal spiritual life of Esther. Right, that what Mordechai is saying. I got one question for you: do you care or not? But ichpat lecha or lo ichpat lecha. It was part of a sicha in which he encouraged people to go into chinuch. Okay, fine. That's not the point for now. But that's the main moment here, right? Where he's saying, do you care? It will happen. The test here is not will the Jews be saved. The question is, will you be part of it? Do you care to be part of it? Right? Ichpat lecha or lo ichpat lecha. And then what Rav Lichtenstein described here is that, what do you see? The second half of the paragraph is this beautiful transformation of a person who decides, I care and I'm taking responsibility because that's the right thing to do. And that's what happens, Pasuk Ted Vav. Vatomer Esther Lashiva Mordechai. Immediately, right? She transforms, she becomes Jewish again, she becomes in charge of the Jews, right? Everything in the next two psukim is her putting her life on the line, reintegrating into Jewish society like that, right? It's like, it's right? It just goes off. He puts it to her. It's that moment where it's, do you want to be Persian? You want to be Jewish, essentially, right? Do you care about your brothers? And she says, "Lech knoset kol yudim anim sim b'shushan v'tzumo alai v'altachlu v'altishlush lo shemim v'layla v'yom gam ani v'narta etzum kein v'chein av'ol ha-melech asher lo chadat v'chasher avati avati." I will do it if the Jews fast for me. And what does she say? And I love this pasuk. What does she say? I'll go against the dot. Except in the Megillah, what does that mean? No, come on. Haman says there's a nation who doesn't follow the laws of the king. And she says, I will violate the law of the king. Meaning, that is her identifying with the Jews. Right? That's what it is. The Jews are identified in the book as the people who don't follow the dot of the king. Now that was a false accusation, but here's Esther embracing it and saying, yes, I will be Jewish. If the Jews will fast for me, then I will be the person who will break the dot HaMelech.
Right.
It's like someone can be taxed to try and help the Jews.
right?
And it's also at the moment that Daniel leaves that they all start adopting Daniel.
Yes, that's exactly what I'm saying. Midrashically, it's, right, Daniel, I think that's what Chazal are saying, is, right, Esther gets that injection of Daniel's spirit at this moment.
But why does Daniel have to leave for that? I don't understand that.
So that just might be that, you know, Hatach... he did his job, exactly. Now it's direct between...
Jumps to another Nach story.
Yeah. Right, and then Rav Lichtenstein notes that what's the result? What's the result of Daniel... Not of Daniel, of Esther taking on the role? Like this, the story switches. Until this point in the story, who's the main mover and shaker? Mordechai. And as soon as Esther takes responsibility, it flips. Because, Pasuk Yud Zayin, Vayavor Mordechai Vayaskechal Asher Tzivta Alav Esther. Right? Mordechai just does whatever Esther says. Right? Meaning, that's all it took. Is the second she lives up to her challenge, right? She has transformed. She's embraced her Jewish identity. She's embraced her leadership role. And Mordechai is relegated to number two. And that's all it took. Right? And this is an amazing moment. And this is where everything flips. Because now everything goes downhill for Haman and uphill for the Jews. Right? This is the flip of the book. Is this moment of transformation where she, right, unassimilates. And that's really how this very dramatic perek ends. There was one more point I wanted to make before I go do the Agadah this year. What was the point I wanted to make here? Okay, I don't know. But anyway, that should give you a feel, though, for this transformative parak. Right? This parak really is the one where Esther transforms and becomes Jewish again. Right? Unassimilates, and yet it is that injection, so to speak, of Danielness into Esther that saves her life, or saves the lives of the Jews. Of course, I would just point out that, right, another one of the parallels to the Mishkan is that how, when you actually decide to go Lifnei HaMelech, how do you go? Fasting. Right, fasting. Right.
Where does that come up with the Beit
HaMikdash? Yom Kippur. The only time you go Lifnei HaMelech, because there's a Kadashim, is fasting. Right? Meaning, there is that nice imagery parallel here.
Right.
Okay, let's stop there because I really have to give the Agadah this year, but at least that is a lot of the drama in chapter 4. So let's